Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and you know, my name may be David, but I'm about to kick back and relax while technical producer Eddie Garcia takes on the Giants.
Don't let's start. This is the worst part. To believe for all the world that you're my precious little...
They Might Be Giants have been making off-kilter alternative rock since before that particular term had ever been coined. Friends and musical partners John Linnell and John Flansburg began as a duo in Brooklyn, New York, back in 1982. They were staples in the Lower East Side club scene, and by 1986 they released their first record featuring the song Don't Let's Start, which we're listening to right now.
The words I'm singing now mean nothing more than me out to an animal.
The two Johns signed with Elektra Records in 1989 and released the platinum-selling record Flood, which boasted alt-rock hits Birdhouse in Your Soul and Istanbul, Not Constantinople, a song that was all over MTV, particularly in the wee hours, back when MTV actually showed videos. The band continued to release albums throughout the 90s, such as Apollo 18 and John Henry, all the while touring relentlessly with a fleshed-out band, making visually ingenious videos and developing a cult-like fan base. The last decade saw They Might Be Giants winning a Grammy for the theme song to the television series Malcolm in the Middle. They also dove headfirst into the world of kids' music, which is not that surprising given their flair for fun, engaging, and spirited pop music that has been known to serve up unexpected lessons on history, geography, and science. They've also had a documentary made about them. Gigantic, A Tale of Two Johns, was released in 2003 and featured live performances and interviews with the likes of Jon Stewart, Frank Black of the Pixies, and Ira Glass. With a platinum record, 3 gold records, 2 Grammys, an iPhone app, and 15 full-length albums, not to mention tons of EPs and singles under their belts, they've just released their 16th album, Nanobots.
Grow the nanobots. Loads of nanobots. Throw them in the cracks.
They Might Be Giants are hitting the road, and they'll be taking the stage at Ziggy's in Winston-Salem on Sunday, October 13th. I had a chance to talk with John Linnell from his home in Brooklyn, days before he and the rest of the Giants headed out on tour. 25 songs in just under 45 minutes. What is it about short songs, you know, that appeals to you guys?
I think that John and I came up in the punk rock period, and we feel like the promise of the incredibly short song has never been properly fulfilled. You know, I think there's something very exciting and thrilling and satisfying about that format. You know, the extremely short song where you essentially just say exactly what you have to say and get the hell out. The other thing is, it's a fun kind of song to write because you have your idea and there's really not a lot of revision or fiddling around. It's like a prose poem. You just come up with the idea, and if it's no good, you have to just move on and try writing another one from scratch because they don't tend to be subject to a lot of revision. So that's one of the very fun and satisfying things about writing them, and I think they're fun to listen to.
Let's go backwards and destroy the past. How long will your oxygen last?
Some of the songs on the record, you've got, you know, a 6-second song like Hive Mind, and some 15, 17 seconds. Do you feel like they're standalones, or do you, it seems like some of them are almost in together, like in a suite, or are they really working within the whole context of the record?
Well, the notion was we've done the suite thing in the past, you know, with a track called Fingertips on our fourth album, Apollo 18, you know, back then was when we established this way of doing very short ideas in a way that we liked. And in the intervening time, we've occasionally done short songs or short suites of songs. But the notion on this album, on Nanobots, is that these are individual songs that can be listened to individually in any order. They should stand by themselves. That's how they're conceived. They don't actually belong together.
Everywhere around this burg, they're running out of verbs, adverbs and adjectives. Everywhere around this town, they're running out of nouns. They're running out of nouns.
Well, along with those songs, I mean, there's definitely plenty of pop songs, 2.5-minute, 3-minute songs.
Yeah.
A few like Replicants, Nanobots, and Block Ops, which I know is a Flansburg tune. They have that They Might Be Giants, playfully sinister feel, but there's this vaguely political thing on some of those songs. I mean, was that a conscious...
I would say to various degrees, the politics of Black Ops are pretty overt, I would say, which is it's about those people who conduct clandestine wars. Apparently, it's how we mostly conduct wars nowadays. You know, it's troubling. But, I mean, I would say, like, in any case, whenever we write a song that seems to have a political message, that the point of the song is to be a song. It's delivering what a song delivers, which is, a story that you listen to, that you respond to. You know, it's not a manifesto or a tract or anything like that. That's not what we do.
Hi, I forgot your name. Whatever. My point is, hi, your head's on fire. Oh, damn.
You're on fire, which is the album kicks off with. Upbeat song and lots of really cool guitar parts on there. And you guys made a great video to go along with that.
You know, we hire people who are often these kind of amazingly brilliant visual artists to do the videos. And I would say, like, most of the time, they just come up with all this stuff on their own. It's very gratifying for us to have somebody else do something creative with our work that is so open-ended and spontaneous, I would say. Isn't just the obvious thing we would make based on the music.
Mm-hmm. That's always been the case with your videos, it seems. I mean, when I was younger and staying up really late watching 120 minutes and your videos came on, it seemed like you always affiliate yourself with people who could really do something really interesting.
We really didn't want the video to just be a visual enactment of the lyrics. And I think we felt pretty strongly that that just seemed too dead of an idea. I think it was partly our fear of it seeming thoughtless that we really insisted that the visuals not be what we call see-say. In other words, that they're not just direct acting out of the lyrics in the song.
Istanbul was Constantinople, now it's Istanbul, now Constantinople, been a long time gone. Constantinople, now it's Turkish delight, on a moonlit night. Every gal in Constantinople lives in Istanbul, now Constantinople, so if you've a date in Constantinople, she'll be waiting in Istanbul. Even old New York was once New Amsterdam. Why they changed it, I can't say. People just liked it better that way.
So take me back.
You and Flansburgh write most of the songs independently, or do you write together, or is it a mix?
We almost entirely write independently, you know. We each write songs. Of course, you know, when we're writing, we're always thinking of the other guy's inevitable auditioning of it. And, you know, I think for me, and I think probably this is true for John as well, there's nothing more crushing than writing something, you know, having it met with less than enthusiasm, you know. I'm very concerned that John isn't left cold by the song, so I'm thinking about him when I'm writing it. You know, it's got to be good, particularly because this other guy is going to say what he has to say about it. You know, and I think he probably feels the same way. That, you know, it's a drag if I'm like, well, that's okay.
Yeah. You have so many songs that have complex or deceptively simple, in some cases, arrangements. Do you get that all fleshed out before you head into the studio, or do you kind of leave a little bit to be opened
up
in the studio?
Well, this is the way it works now, is we almost always have an idea for the rhythm section, and we try and spell those things out. But I think that we also feel like it could get changed. We could certainly change it up, and we have these musicians who are really great at coming up with spontaneous ideas. It's just a question of how strongly we feel about what we've come up with already. And then there's a certain amount of editing that goes on. You know, we'll often over-track a song, and then the way we wind up mixing it is by stripping out stuff and, you know, trying to make it simpler by removing tracks until we like what's left.
Does that help for live translation, too?
Well, the live is a whole other problem because we don't necessarily mimic the album arrangement in the live version. So we have to come up with something that works live, that obviously that the five of us can play and that brings something to the song, you know. It doesn't have to sound exactly like the record.
All right. Well, when you come to Winston, what's in store for the show? Are you, is it all nanobots all the time? Is it, you know, a mix of classics? And what are you doing?
Yes. It's a mix of the music of the 80s, 90s, O's. I still don't know what you call that decade.
People try to say aughts, and that just seems, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll be playing a mix of all those decades, the aforementioned decades. We will be focusing on our new album, Nanobots. We've got about 7 or 8 songs that we play from the new album. And then we will also play a mix of stuff that was made into videos, in other words, the singles, and stuff that is more obscure, like album tracks. Stuff that the people in the front row want to hear.
A shooting star is not a star.
Let's talk about your contribution to the world of kids' music. You spent a big chunk of the last decade, the unnameable Zero Zeros, working on kids' music. How did you get into that?
We were not taking it very seriously as an idea originally. We were given a small amount of money by Rounder to make a kids' record, which, you know, seemed like just like a fun project. It wasn't really like a career move, certainly, and it kind of exploded. The kids' record that we made, which is called No, outsold Mink Car, probably like sold half again as many copies. So we I think we sort of sat up at that point, but oh yeah, this is the thing we could do. This is a whole audience. It didn't seem like a ghetto. I think we were concerned when we first started out that people. You know, our first album looks like a kid's record because it's got this kind of almost like H.A. Ray, Curious George style of art on it. And in fact, Tower Records, when they received it, accidentally slotted it into their children's record department. We had to let them know that it was not a kid's record. But we've, you know, over time we learned that parents did like to play our music for their kids. And I think when we made No, we were sort of thinking we'd make a record that was basically a They Might Be Giants album, only that was appropriate for kids. It wasn't supposed to be dumbed down, or we didn't smooth off the edges completely.
What do you think kids appreciate?
Well, I think we found out that kids need entertainment just as much as adults. And even though often the expectation is that music for kids is supposed to be good for them somehow, we thought, well, that's not the way people treat culture for adults, so why should we make it any different for kids? I think kids need to be entertained, you know, as much as adults. So that was the philosophy. That made it also interesting for us, you know, that it didn't seem like just like a chore.
Yeah.
You know.
So you've released an app for iPhone and Android in conjunction with the new record. Could you tell listeners about that?
Well, it's kind of an extension of the dial-a-song thing that we started doing in the 80s.
Could you explain Dial-A-Song for
us? Yes. Okay. Dial-A-Song was a phone machine in Brooklyn that you'd call up and listen to our songs. And that's all it was. It was a very simple idea. We started advertising in the Village Voice in New York, you know, with just a phone number. You just call up, listen to a song. And it kept going for, I guess, pretty far into the 90s before it kind of became impossible to maintain. But by that time, there started to emerge other ways of getting your music out that were not through records or radio. So, you know, it started to seem like, in a sense, that internet stuff had kind of replaced Dial-A-Song for us. You know, the bizarre and ironic thing is that Dial-A-Song was unique, as far as I know. Now, everybody listens to music on their phone. That's just ordinary. Mm-hmm. And if people buy music without going out of the house and all that stuff, in some ways, that was the whole point of Dial-A-Song in the first place. So I think, in a sense, we now live in this environment where everything is like Dial-A-Song. And so, you know, we're just continuing to exploit that reality now.
Right.
Yeah.
Looking at Harry and the Outlet by the light switch, who watches over you? Make a little birdhouse in your soul, not to put too fine a point on it. Say I'm the only bee in your bonnet.
You know, you guys have been playing together over 30 years. I mean, not many musical collaborations last that long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why do you think that is?
Well, it's easier for me to speculate about why bands break up. We can't compare our experience because we didn't break up. You know, my sense is that the reason that bands break up is often pretty simple and predictable, which is that they start out doing something they're very excited about, and then they're disappointed in some way, or they feel like they're missing out on something else, or they're frustrated with the limitations of their collaboration. And now for us, those things didn't happen. We never felt like we were being held back or that the potential seemed to be unfulfilled. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Instead, I think we kind of felt like, well, if there is unfulfilled potential, like, we can just like continue to work until we fulfill it. But it seems like we're still impressed by the amount of potential, I guess. And it's fun and satisfying doing this. So I don't know what it would be like for the Demo Giants to break up, because we never did. So I don't know why we should, you know. I don't know what would be the reason for it to happen, you know.
To make a huge comeback, of course.
Well, that would be the cynical thing to do. Yeah.
Right. All right. Well, it's been great talking with you. And
nice speaking with you. We're looking forward to coming down to Winston-Salem once again. It'll be a really fun show.
Awesome.
Killing Jason off and countless screaming Argonauts.
John Linnell of They Might Be Giants. Their 16th album, Nanobots, packs 25 songs into 45 minutes, and it's available right now. You can experience They Might Be Giants live and up close at Ziggy's in Winston-Salem, Sunday, October 13th. You'll find links to tickets, music, and their app at WFDD.org, and click on Try It Arts Weekend.
Inside the